Live Wild's Connection Matters podcast, bringing together heart-centered, nature-connected, curious people who share the inquiry, how can we create a connected and meaningful way of living that brings more health, happiness and growth to our world? My name is Leona Johnson and I am your host. Hello and welcome to episode 28 of Connection Matters podcast. How are you today? I'm really glad to be bringing you this lovely conversation with Amy Mander, who is Head of Global Social Leaders in Future Foundations. And that's an organisation that, I'll read you the mission. The mission is to inspire young people to achieve their full potential and become leaders in their lives and within society. The vision is a society where all organisations are led by socially conscious people, with every young person making the transition into adulthood with the foundations they need for their future. So I really like the sound of this organisation. I really loved the conversation that I had with Amy. It felt really natural, but I have an apology to make. We talk in the episode about a future festival, and in fact that future festival is happening right now. And the reason that I didn't record this intro and get this episode out in time is because my gran died. My gran was 90 years old, and she was the matriarch of our family, the last of 11 brothers and sisters, in fact. How amazing is that? And she was outspoken and strong and loving and, you know, one of those real survivors of her age. And I was lucky enough to be with her for the 2 days holding vigil before she died, which meant she wasn't on her own at all, and I was actually with her when she passed over to the other side, which is such a privilege and an honour, and it took quite a lot out of me, actually. As much as I feel quite mature and rational about the fact that, you know, older people pass and that's the part of life and it's what helps us really engage with living life fully when we know, you know, death, when we experience death and come close to it. And at the same time, there's a part of grief that isn't logical and isn't rational and just slows you right down in a way that you might not expect. And that's what's happened to me. So here I am, being me, being showing up as I am, which is having and being in the middle of this process. So I hope you still enjoy, I know you'll still enjoy the conversation. And Global Social Leaders is, and Future Foundations is an organisation that is running all sorts of things all of the time. So please do check out their website. The links are in the show notes. And if you happen to catch this episode on the day that it's released, then you may also catch the end of the festival, which I am speaking at. I'm going to be running a workshop for young people from all around the world on grief, actually, talking about grief and the importance of sharing our authentic emotions and being able to do that, normalizing that so that we're not storing, holding and blocking our creativity, our open-heartedness and all that helps us feel more fully alive and present. And imagine if we had a world where we had leaders who were really connected to that, to connected to the need for addressing, acknowledging and being with all of our feelings and emotions that we feel on a day-to-day basis. That's the world that I'm hoping to move into. So yeah, really feel grateful to be able to do that with Global Social Leaders, and maybe that will happen again in the future sometime. If you enjoy the podcast, please do hit subscribe and on whatever app that you listen to. And if you listen on Apple Podcasts and iTunes, do leave us a review, because that's one way that we get boosted up a little bit on the listener ratings, and that helps us to get seen and visible with more people. Also, if you'd like to get in touch, then the best way to contact me is through emailing me at connectionmatterspodcast@livewild.org.uk. You can also go to www.livewild.org.uk for more information about the things that we do and signing up to the mailing list and all of that sort of thing. So without further ado, this is Amy Mander. Hi, Amy. Welcome to Connection Matters Podcast. It's really nice to speak to you. How are you today?
I'm very well, thank you. Yeah, doing well. Sun's out, which is really nice.
Yes, it's lovely here too. Well, you may know that we usually start this program with gratitude, and I'd love to share something that I'm grateful for today. I live on the edge of a little town in West Yorkshire in the north of England, and I'm really lucky to have woods right on my doorstep. And I went out this morning for my sit spot, and I was sitting on the edge of this little circle of oaks, and this tiny little rabbit came closer and closer and closer to me. And I was doing this practice where I was trying to sort of send out love to this rabbit, and like a sense of safety, like I'm safe, just, and it just kept coming closer and closer and closer till it was about a meter away from me, and just sat and watched me for I don't know, it felt like an hour, but it was probably about 10 minutes. We were just really close, and I just thought, how special is that? It must be a baby rabbit that maybe wasn't used to humans yet, and didn't know it was supposed to run away from me. But maybe it was just a special moment. And so I'm really grateful that I have that on my doorstep, and that I shared that experience with a little bunny rabbit this morning, because it brings me a sense of joy. It brings me a sense of being connected to more than the human world. And that is what inspires me often and keeps me driven with purpose and meaning in life. So yeah, how are you? And what's made you smile?
What are you I have a 2-year-old, and she is hilarious. And mornings in our house are a combination of negotiations, and everything to her is play. So she's very funny, and she thinks everything's hilarious. So getting ready for nursery, I don't know, she reminds me to not take myself so seriously. So she plays peekaboo, or she'll run and hide and seek, and she'll be like, hide, and runs away. And I suddenly was like, oh, I've got this really important meeting. But then I forget that, what's the point in working if you can't enjoy the joy? So she always kind of keeps me in check. I guess it's kind of like having a jester to remind you you're not that important, but equally you're very important to a little person. So I think I just love the kind of buzz in our house in the mornings, and kind of just how she kind of, this gets a little bit chaotic with my husband trying to leave and her trying to leave to get to nursery, and there's always like a battle over which hat to wear, or backwards, or where the hairband is. But she's just a lot of fun, and she's got the most extraordinary laugh. And I think I just, yeah, I'm really, and like I said, the sun's out, so today her getting to wear a hat was like a really exciting thing, because she's like, it's not raining. And then like, yay, things like, we have a cat, and she's like, loves feeding our cat. So it's just, I think she brings a lot of joy to the little things that I think used to feel quite mundane. And now things like having breakfast and feeding the cat are like full activities of joy. She's a bit like a festival. I don't know, it's a bit like a bit hanging out with someone. Like, I'm coming back from the park yesterday, we had to look for flowers, and it was also this magical experience because there was someone playing a harp, and just watching her negotiate life is just, it's just like everything's exciting, like seeing a puppy or a dog or like something on the floor. So it takes like 25 minutes to walk 10 meters basically, but it kind of reminds me to slow down. And I think after having spent the last year online with everything really fast and meetings, it's really nice to have someone to keep me in check. So I'm really, really grateful for her, and the fact that we've been so lucky with her health in a time that loads of people haven't been. So that to me is something I'm really grateful every day, that we've been through a pandemic and we've all kept well and all of our family are well. So yeah, I'm really, really grateful for that. Yeah.
Well, I will join you in that gratitude, both for the children, because my children do the same. They definitely bring me back down to earth and help me find that playful side of life when things get a bit serious.
Yeah.
And also, for my health and body and for that of my loved ones as well, because we've also been healthy and generally happy and very fortunate over the last weeks and months. And great, lovely. It's really nice to hear a little bit of people's lives, I think, just straight away. Get cut through all of the unnecessary and let's share some gratitude. I love it. So we met only 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Online, because I have been invited to speak or input to the Global Social Leaders Festival, which is occurring next month. And it was just so inspiring to receive not only the invitation, but to connect with you and hear a little bit more about what's going on for young people. And so I'd love you to tell us a little bit about the Global Social Leaders program, and let's start there.
It came out of the minds of two really phenomenal people. One of them's our CEO, and the other one is the director of a coaching and leadership institute, Katie Granville Chapman, and the CEO of FF is John Harper. And they were looking for a way to, it happened, like, they were kind of a bit ahead of the time, but they were looking a way to connect young minds to think about what's going on in the world, but from around the world. And it actually started over a curry. They got invited to set up a leadership camp residential program with a school in Singapore. And they said, why don't we invite other schools? Let's see if we can share the connection. So it actually started off as a residential. And then over the years, we've looked for ways to make it more accessible, because obviously to fly around the world to one place and have 2 weeks is amazing and it's an incredible connection, but it's actually limiting in terms of how many people can access that. So the inspiration behind it is to really get young people to think about what the change they want in the world and how they can do something within their own lives to have a positive impact for them, but also for others. And really just starting to bed those kind of ideas of that we're interconnected and the things we do have an impact on other people. So that's where it really started out, sort of personal development, but also how can we then take the resource we have and the knowledge we have and how can we go around and, I guess, make the world a better place for other people. And the Sustainable Development Goals came out and we started using that as a framework to understand action. I think that's probably one of the most amazing global commitments to change for the better for all. So it suddenly been that we had suddenly had like a conversation that we could have under these 17 goals, which people then understood and that could be applied, that goal 8 for education works anywhere. So, and they're quite broad, and that's the kind of beauty of them, that everything can kind of fall into them. So then you develop this global discourse about how change can happen. We started it's kind of grown organically. We started a competition that was free. And we just basically handed out, like, it was simply a PDF to start with, being like, to teachers, encourage young people to come together, form a team and use one of the goals and create a project. And that's just escalated in the last 4 years. And this year we've just literally yesterday, it's just great timing for the podcast. We had, we were selecting our finalists, which is like the hardest part of my job. And it's also like the most moving. So we asked the young people, we had 448 submissions this year, which is our highest ever. So I think one of the things that's been so inspiring is just how driven young people are at the moment to, like, they're hungry for change. Like and I think COVID's really opened up the space to tell us the system that we're living in is broken and it doesn't, the BLM movement last year. And then you're seeing this huge drive of gender equality, like with, the girls in my team that are coming up behind me, they don't even ask for it. They just demand that, like, their voices are heard. And I think that's the thing that is becoming really prominent, is that we don't even really need to do much. We just need to give them a tiny little space and then they just take the rest themselves. So I guess GSL is a movement, but it's become a movement because the young people have demanded it's a movement. Like, we run programs and they're phenomenal and they're great, and we help young people to connect with each other, and that has actually become easier online in many ways. So we've actually been able to bring young people from 69 countries this year together on Zoom calls to talk about issues. Wow. It's probably diverging slightly because it's a kind of mixed mash of all these different things. But what we're seeing now is that they're really clued up. Digital technology has made young people really aware of the world and of different discourses that can exist in the world, because we're getting this kind of feedback where people are creating their own news and their own stories in a way. I guess when I was growing up, it was just mass media. And so you are seeing this dialogue between, I guess, what's happening in Iran and in Palestine at the moment. You know, you're seeing this kind of feedback that before it was always just one person's voice dominating a story. Mm-hmm. And now you've got young people. We have all these young people that create all their own blogs and they're telling their own stories. Mm. And that's, I guess, sorry, that's kind of what's been so amazing about it. So in many ways, we create the platform and then we get out their way. That's how I feel about it at the moment. So we sort of give them channels to be able to amplify their voices. Mm-hmm. And one of those channels is the festival. Mm-hmm. And one of the things we like to do is to help them, I guess, understand there are so many different ways of being in the world and that everyone has a value and a place. And I think one of the reasons one of my colleagues contacted you is because she's so inspired by your podcast, that we want them to think about not just the change they want to make, but how we go about making that change. So it's not just like the end goal, it's how we get to those goals. Because so often we're so goal focused, especially in the West, that we forget about the people that are part of that process, and actually the people are the process. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the work we do in the kind of personal development thing is like, when you're working in a team, it's not just about getting to the end of the agenda, it's how you get to the agenda, it's how you make people feel. And I think that's something that's increasingly that young people are becoming aware of, their respect for each other as humans, and they're finding this kind of common voice outside of, I guess, national borders understanding or even ethnicity, because there has been such a movement around the globe that I guess wasn't around 60 years ago. And, you know, we've got young people with intersexual personalities who have come from so many different backgrounds, like, you know, who live in one country but their parents were from a different country, and then that parent has two different parents from two different countries. So you're now seeing this kind of this kaleidoscope of understanding of what it means to be human. And I think people are looking for these young people are now kind of grouping themselves under their values rather than in a kind of traditional identification system, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that we are seeing more of in our programs and in what's coming out of the people in terms of their podcasts they create and their websites, and, you know,
Wow.
I don't know if I answered your question.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it makes me feel so excited about the world. And I absolutely agree that it's about the process, isn't it? It's about how we get, not where we get to, but what are we doing here and now? What is this moment in how we speak, how you and I speak, you know, what we do before and afterwards, how we look after each other, how we model the world we want to live in, rather than having these goals and then just in that same sort of, it's a sort of masculine quality of being driven to things just to get there. It's really about this windy road of doing it in a way that is about connection, that is about peace, that is about collaboration and listening and really, really being in our bodies and being with each other. So I love that there's young people who are now not only learning about that, but are modeling that and calling it into their lives. I often wonder, because I did an activity one time, one of the trainings that we do around the Eight Shields asks us to look at all the different generations, you know, so from 0 to 10 year olds, 10 to 20 year olds, 20 to 30 year olds. And in terms of decades anyway, and how many people do you know in each age group? And I realized that I really don't know very many people that are either teenagers or in their 20s. And I'm only, you know, I'm in my early 40s. And and I realized, you know, that's a massive gap of knowledge and interaction that I'm missing out on. And I speak to lots of people, but I don't have a lot of older friends who've got children of that age, and my children are a lot younger. So I just missed out on meeting those young people. And I do feel that it's an area that I can only imagine how it is right now for young people to be living in this world as it is right now. And often I feel scared and I feel negative about what's going on for young people right now. But from what you're saying, it sounds like there's a lot of energy for change and transition and transformation. And is that right?
Yeah, that's what we're seeing. And we're seeing also a lot of, there's been a really... and kind of wanting to happen across the board. So a lot of the projects that we like looked at yesterday for our competition, you're seeing young people wanting to bring everyone on that change, regardless of like socioeconomic status, and looking at how we can collaborate with each other and how they can almost, you're almost seeing this kind of education upwards to adults. And I think even from like 4 years ago, that's a big shift. I mean, I think one of the most prominent memories I have about the first year we ran the competition was actually the first school that won the competition connected with their local traditional community, the Biosora community in Transylvania. And it actually isn't one of the prerequisites of the global goals. And the first judge said to me, they've actually found like the 18th goal of like, how do we connect back with Indigenous knowledge? So you're also now seeing this kind of understanding of like, they're kind of wanting to reach out to all people. And that, yeah, the collaboration thing has been really strong this year in a way that I hadn't seen before. And I don't know that if that's because there's, I guess with the COVID, with what happens with COVID and pandemic, is there's been a lot of heart that's come out, and there's a lot of people wanting to, because it's been like, it's a really dark, dire time, but actually people have been looking for hope. You know, like we have the rainbow symbol here and people are wanting to share their gratitude for all those that have like dedicated their time and their energy and put their lives at risk to save others. And I do think even like underneath it all, there's this real humanness that's happening. And I think young people have really like connected to that. So some of the projects we saw in November, in February, actually, it was like them working out how they could support like the real understanding of what happened with like outbreaks in certain areas. There's one young child in Thailand who was looking at how he could support knowledge sharing through the Filipino community that he's part of, because they weren't listening to the news reports. So they were trying to find a different way of communicating it to keep people safe. And I think that's it. There's, I don't know, it's kind of showed everyone that we're connected and we're not like, there's nowhere in the world that could be untouched by it. And that's it, it's transcended all borders, and that I don't think has ever happened before. And no one, you know, regardless of where you're from, everyone can be affected by it. And I think that's kind of also showing that we're one. In a kind of, it's a bit like the Tao, isn't it? It's a bit like yin yang of like, there's all this darkness and then this like circle of hope with it. And I think I'm probably really lucky because we see the best of the best, I guess, because they're the young people that have come to us. But I what gets me out of bed in the morning.
That is important, isn't it? We are really affected by the stories that we hear. So for there to be this channel for you and for the young people, to share their positive stories, to share their stories of hope, is what's going to keep some people moving. It's going to keep them thinking and believing that there is a future, rather than, if you listen to some media, feeling like it's all hopeless and actually, you know, the world, you know, climate change and all of these things are going to be so bad as we grow, as we move into the future, that it's hardly worth it. And actually, you know, even with stories of hope, that still is a real thing. Being able to, I think, be with the real challenges of our times and share thoughts and share experiences is really important as well. Is that part of some of the projects that you do?
Yeah, so this summer we really built in, we were really mindful of the impact that no one's had the same pandemic. no one's had the same experience of the pandemic. So when we won a COVID response bid by Innovate UK, and we worked with just over 1,700 young people in the UK. And we were aware that not all of them, you know, some of them might have a mother or a father who works in the NHS. Some of them may have, you know, been living on a country estate. You had young people from everybody, you know, we tried to connect with all the young people that we could on that program. And one of the big things about it was trying to look at how we can support, I guess, sitting with that complexity and creating space and that, okay, it was okay not to feel okay. And that's also like, you know, mental health is a big challenge for young people. There is a lot of pressure on young people, especially in the education system. And I guess without those regular support structures, because they've been out of school and, you know, a lot of young people are at really, really high risk of, you know, all those kind of safety nets that we have to support young people who are in really challenging situations aren't in place when schools are closed. So you're also looking at children that have no longer got their lifelines. You know, that was one of the biggest things that was most upsetting about it, was you suddenly realize that for some children, school was a really safe place. Mm-hmm. So we started embedding sessions around well-being, mm-hmm. and looking at things around how you do, like how you can do even just small acts of, I guess, like you did this morning about gratitude. So one thing is we do like the jar of joy, where you look at things in your life that bring you joy and you write little pieces of paper and you put them in. And then if you need a reminder, you take them out. And then we did things even like a lot around creativity. So we have some amazing, absolutely amazing coaches who work on our programs. Mm-hmm. And then one of them in particular is phenomenal at Nadia. He's phenomenal at getting the young people to think of a concept and then they create a collective poem online, which I'd love to share with you. Some of them, they're amazing. And the young people kind of almost like spit word poet over each other using the chat function. I don't know how she does it.
Wow. So,
but she's brought this like this sense of connection. And that was the other thing we were trying to do with these online programs. It wasn't just about going out to make change. It was like, just come and like share where you are and connect with other young people. And that was like, you're not alone. There are other 15-year-olds out there who also feel like you, and we're going to give you a space to share that or listen to somebody. And it might not be that we try and meet young people with where they're at. That's why we use these trained coaches, mm-hmm. who are phenomenal at what they do, because we want to create a safe environment for them to share as much or as little as they want, but doesn't mean they're not impacted by the situation they're in. Mm-hmm. And we've now been developing more sessions around the idea of resilience and how do we be gentle and kind to ourselves. And the kind of, we have a lot of reflection built in, and the kind of reflections that have been coming out the program was that young people have, especially ones that I guess sometimes are considered to be high achievers, they were like, I realized I didn't always have to like be successful, and I wasn't giving myself time to breathe, and that was causing anxiety. So now I realized that a huge amount of it was going out to connect with nature. Mm-hmm. So it's like, how do you get away from the screens? And you might be inspired by this session, but then how do you take that out and take your mindfulness out to, like you said this morning, sitting and noticing a rabbit. And most people might walk in the woods and not even notice what's around them. Mm-hmm. So just trying to get them to slow down a bit in a world that feels quite chaotic and fast. I guess there's that thing of being online is, I guess, a blessing and a curse. It comes with its own risks. Mm-hmm. But the kind of environment we try and create is a very safe one, and we try and keep the pace at a way where, you know, it's like this, it's like a conversation, mm-hmm. you know, with real people having real connection. Mm-hmm. And that's been our main focus. But yeah, we really are trying to support this idea of you can't be a leader in life and make great change if you're not looking after yourself. Mm-hmm. So how do you put taking care of yourself at the heart of things you do, and that it's okay sometimes if you want to stop making big change and take a break and look after yourself, but how do you embed those practices? And we are seeing some of those reflections coming from the young people and panels that we hold and things. I think that's probably, for me, one lesson I need to learn myself that the pandemic has taught me, and I guess a lot of us do as adults, especially when you're in your passion project, there's a tendency to kind of burn yourself out, mm-hmm. because you feel like you're doing this massive thing that you need to always do, and it's actually, you know, change will happen. Systemic change happens slowly is one of my big phrases in my head at the moment. So it's okay sometimes to let it happen around you rather than always feeling like you're having to mm-hmm. push it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I really just teaching young people little practices that they're starting to embed in their lives, like gratitude and reflection, I think are some of the really cool things that we've always embedded in our programs and hopefully will help them as they grow and as they develop and as they get older, so that they, you know, keep keep themselves in check and keep putting themselves and themselves first and making sure that they are eating well, sleeping well, because you're no good to anybody if you're not looking after yourself.
True.
And I think that's one of the things that we've been trying to really hold true during this period. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what do you do? What do you do to look after yourself?
I have been doing Tai Chi now for 15 years, so I am super happy because my Tai Chi class has opened and I've been part of this community of practice for 15 years. You can do it on your own, but I'll be honest, I'm better in a group. Mm-hmm. And so, and it's, I guess I have my elders, for want of a better word. So I'm not, there's only like a couple of, I was one of the only women for a long time other than my teacher's wife. And then there's now two other girls, girls, I say they're also women. And I just, we had our group last Monday and it was just like walking back into a, walking back into a hug. And it's a space for laughter and we've all known each other. We actually all traveled to China a couple of years ago to train in China. So, and they've been huge. They're like, yeah, they're like my family. Mm-hmm. They like pick us up, and especially with a small child in a society that doesn't always support people with small children. You know, people's wives have looked after my daughter for me so I can go train, and you know, they've given their time and their energy to support us. And my husband and I both go, so they've seen us meet and go in as a couple and then get married, and then the choice of coming in the middle of a marital. They've been part of that journey. And I guess to them, I'm a young person, because they're all like these guys, some of them are in their 50s and 60s. So it's like being in a room of like all kind of granddads and dads and uncles. And and that's just a really special place. And then the other thing I do is, I have some gratitudes I practice at the end of the day. And when I have space, I do my morning pages, which is something that, so just free writing, especially if I, when I have got a little bit too into my work and can't sleep. And if I'm in a kind of, you know, when you're in a creative space, sometimes you go a little bit into a kind of space where you're not sleeping very well. So especially if I'm working on content, I'll get up and rather than kind of lying in bed, I try and bring the energy down and put it into a book and then just close the book and put it to one side. And then, play, I think, is probably my one big thing for well-being, making sure I make time for my daughter and make time, laugh every day. So if I'm really bummed, it's I've got some really favorite comedians that I I like to follow through social media, or I like raw comedy. So people who don't shy away from the truth, as you probably noticed, I like to go straight for it. So I think those are the things. It's just and poetry, probably for me, being like, there's some really amazing poets out there that I find really inspirational. In particular, I've got a couple that Rumi is one of my favorite poets. So I keep a Rumi book by my bed. And if I'm feeling a bit beaten by the world, I tend to a Rumi poem. I kind of do this thing where you like open the book without looking for what you're opening for and just see what lands. And that's been one of my kind of practices that I've done for a while. So I try and see what maybe the universe wants to tell me, rather than me trying to always find something that fits. I'm like, oh, maybe that's what I need to do today. Maybe I need to think about this thing. And I find that his words speak to me, but maybe not for everybody.
Oh, I love that. I love that. And I love Rumi poems as well. I don't know Rumi very well, but they just keep coming back to me, keep coming from different angles. So definitely.
And there's also Desiderata I used to have on my wall at university. So I actually learned it in Spanish. My husband made me learn it in Spanish when I was learning Spanish. So if I can't sleep, I try and remember it in Spanish, and that usually makes me get so lazy that I fall asleep, because I'm like, I don't want to practice my Spanish. But I find that that is one of those, there's so many universal truths in it about, you know.
Do you know it off by heart?
Oh, you're gonna make me walk placidly amidst the noise and haze and remember what peace there may be in silence. No, I don't remember it off my heart. I can't do it now. I know there's certain few things, which is like, do not compare yourself to others, for you shall become vain and bitter. Take kindly the counsels of your years. remember what piece there may be in silence. Mm-hmm. I probably could, but you're putting me on the spot right now. And
fair enough.
But yeah, that's one of the ones that I kind of go back to. Yeah,
I'm going to add that to the show links, just so for those who don't know the Desiderata. Yeah, it definitely was one of those that was on all of my toilet doors for a lot of years. I haven't had it out for a while, so.
Yeah, I think it's the listen to others, even the dull and ignorant, for they too have their story.
Yes.
And I think, yeah. And I think my friend, talking about toilet ones, though, my friend had the What Is So on her wall, yes. Which is from, I think it's the Landmark Forum. Mm-hmm. But she used to have that, and it was like, What Is So is just What Is So. What Is So does not care, think, feel, and know about What Is So. And that one always kind of keeps me in check as well. So.
I also did the Landmark Forum years ago. So
yeah, that one was. I haven't done it. I just remember it on her loo, and every time I used to stay with her, I was like, "Oh, that's a really good."
Yeah,
I think loo reading is probably one of my well-being practices.
It's great. Do you know, because actually, that's the time for reflection, isn't it? It's a time whenever, if you are a busy person, that, you know, just to go and take 5 minutes.
Especially with small children. It's like the only time when you're like, if she's in bed, I'm like, I used to go hide and pretend I was using the loo to get 10 minutes.
Yeah.
The safety of the loo space. Yeah. So, yeah.
Oh, well, that's a good reminder for me as well, actually. There's been poems that I've moved into a new house in January, and then we're still settling in, actually. So there's poems that I've been meaning to write out and put up as reminders, because the words are powerful, hey? And just having those affirmations and reminders and inspiring ways of looking at the world can really help ground us.
Yeah.
And I've loved hearing about all your practices. To be someone who is doing all of the things that you are sharing with young people and supporting them to do is really, really powerful and really important. And something that I guess, and I also heard a little note of this as well and what you were saying, we can have all of these practices and then sometimes they drop and we end up too busy and we end up noticing that we're not maybe modeling or living as we say we should. And that's something I've done recently, is take on way too much, been so busy, and I know that I'm sort of on this treadmill that if I stop, everything will fall off and it'll all be a big mess. And and so for me, it's been a learning again of, oh yeah, there's that situation again. How have I ended up here? What do I need to do to go back to myself, back into connection, back into the things that I know resource me? And that is having boundaries. And
they're very important.
Boundaries for myself and boundaries with others as well. Yeah, so
you can give too much, and then you have to remember that you do need to keep. Sorry, you just reminded me as well of, I don't know if you've seen the campaign, they get like it, one of the things we talked about in this year's program was the stop from Captain Fantastic. You know, when he's in the middle of a crisis, it's like, what do? You stop, think, observe, plan. And it's like when you hit a kind of wall, or you're at the end of your, I guess, coping, or you're end of your kind of full tank, it's like, what do to then, like, okay, I've stopped now, I can see this, I need to think about it, I'm observing this is how I feel, and how do I go forward? And sometimes that is just having a Netflix day. That's the other thing I have to say. Sometimes allowing myself, my mum was a big in favor of the duvet day, especially on my first day of my period when I was younger, because I had a lot of problems with a lot of pain. And she'd be like, just have a duvet day with a hot water bottle. And sometimes it's okay to have that. I've just been like, you know what, today I'm not going to be someone that's doing change. Today I'm going to be someone that just like binges on Law and Order, or which is the whole of like working mums, or, you know, sometimes it's okay to take a big pause and have a step out and just not be fully everywhere for everybody. Because I think,
well, especially, you know, I like that you've named, you know, the menstrual cycle, and that women are in, that, you know, women have this occurrence, this thing that happens every month that actually has quite an impact on how we are and who we are in the world, and can be something that, you know, if you remember the Tampax ads of the 90s, you're expected to go on and play volleyball and be like, you know, I can do this, I can do anything. And recently I've been learning about cultures where they believe what they call the moon time is a time when you're processing not only your own stuff and letting go, because we are physically actually letting go of a lot of stuff, but we're also able to let go and process grief and stuff that needs to transition on behalf of the people around us and loved ones, and even of what's going on in the world. It's a ceremony, you know. If we embraced it and we sat with our menstrual cycle and honored it and celebrated it, then we would know that it's important that we do what feels right rather than actually pushing on through and not doing that. So
yeah, there's a really incredible anthropology anthology called The Wise Wound that my husband actually bought me about 15, 17 years ago. And in it, it's exactly that this time, that basically it talks about the reason we get negative feedback, which is one of the reasons lots of women experience so many problems at that point in the cycle, is because we're meant to be looking after ourselves. And it's the time that we should stop giving, and we should rest, and we should restore, and we should be looked after, because there is this kind of endless sense of women always having to hold space and look after everybody. And I know as a mother, there's this pressure of the mental load and project managing everything. And it should be this time where you really get to recharge and restore and reconnect with that. And one of the reasons she talks about in that you get a negative feedback is because we don't honor that in our society. And I think probably that's one of my most, it does touch on my favorite thing that we're going to have at the festival this year, is a lot of the young girls who are in our movement are super passionate about their periods and about talking about them and about period power and about, you know, acknowledging their menstrual cycle and also the menarch, which is your first one, about that being something that is championed and celebrated, not, people in my life still call it a curse. And I know my mother had an awful first time, but we're actually going to have a period panel at the festival, which is four of the girls who have done projects on this are going to come together and share what they've been doing. And I just, for me, that's one of the biggest, most exciting things of change, because growing up it was like you'd hide it in your bag and it was the most embarrassing thing in the world if your tampon rolled out. And for girls to be, tomorrow is actually Menstrual Hygiene Awareness Day, so you've got girls, if you go on Instagram, there are girls all over the world who are like holding up period pads, and they're celebrating their source of life in a way that I think was very shameful. And that's through loads of different cultures. So for me, I'm a big period power person. So I'm really, that's what I mean about these, especially young women coming up who are, and we are seeing a dominance of, or an increase in girls on our leadership programs, which is amazing. But we're seeing this. Yeah, I think that's it. They're like, they're just unafraid now. They're like, we want this change, and we're going to talk about this thing which we weren't allowed to talk about, and we're going to speak about it, and we're going to make it something that's, you know, common parlance. And I think that really excites me. Yeah.
Really, really exciting. And you know, and great that, you know, we have men and women who listen to this podcast, and it feels as relevant for men and, well, people of all genders to understand that this process is something that affects everybody.
Yeah.
It isn't just something that affects, you know, female body people who have the physicality of it, but that it is an energetic process. It is something that, it is the point of awareness that really helps us to remember how wonderfully amazing our bodies are in being able to create life. And super special. So that's exciting that you're going to have that panel, and that we've sort of gone off on this loop.
You said it might happen. Sorry, we went down the period.
Yeah, absolutely. Brilliant. Love it. So I wondered if you would share some stories about some of the young people, some of the projects that have you've witnessed or heard of through the competitions, because it'd be really nice to just to hear what's actually happening out there. Is that something that's
great. So we had a story last summer when I mentioned the summer program. I think one of the most powerful stories we had was a young girl who was on the program. We only found out after the program, her mother sent us an email saying thank you so much for putting on this program, had a real impact on her daughter's life. And she was actually she was the victim of a road traffic accident, And one of the things we do on our catalyst program, as we call them, our shorter programs, we ask the young people, especially because of COVID restrictions, to do an independent challenge. So they pick something they feel passionate about and they spend 30 days to see, like, it can be really small. It could be like you could grow a micro garden on your window, or you could, you know, plant some seeds, or you could do recycling for 30 days or reduce your plastic or whatever it is. And she decided to raise funds for the charity that had supported her. And she actually, to do that, she ran where she was hit every day for 30 days. And as a result of that, she felt strong enough at the end of it to then write her victim statement and read it out in court against the person that had hit her. And she hadn't felt strong enough to do that. And I guess that's the thing of, like, I didn't even think she turned her camera on the program. So that's what I mean about the kind of ripple effect out that happens. So that was probably, I get tingles when I think about that. And just,
I've got tingles going down my spine now.
That was probably one of those stories that, and then one of the young women who's speaking on the period panel, she has been handing out period products in India to other young people all over the world, in India, to rural communities, and teaching them about menstrual hygiene. I just love that idea of just kind of, you know, like I said, I used to hide mine. So the fact you're like walking around with a bag of it and handling it out in a really empowering way. I'm trying to think of some of the other, we've got so many stories. But yeah, I think the story from the summer was probably one of them. I think some of the other ones for me, it being we had a wellbeing panel. And like I said earlier, it was actually the ones where perhaps they didn't take on a really massively impressive challenge, but it was the fact that they said things of like, I've learned to be kinder to myself, and I've thought about the way that I speak to other people, and I've thought about sharing kindness. And one young girl, as her reflection that she submitted, she'd done these, like, so we asked for a daily reflection so the young people can submit online, you know, what they've learned about the day, or an affirmation to self, which is one of the things we try and get them to do. It's like, you know, if you could tell yourself one thing in the future, what would you want to say to yourself? And this one girl, she'd gone out and she'd created all these really positive, like, little posts on Instagram, like literally in the afternoon, being like, you are beautiful, you are loved. And it was just like, we got it the next morning and I was like, my God, so all evening you sat there and you were sending out all of this gratitude to others and all of these positive affirmations so other people could be affected by that. And I just thought that was a really, it's those stories as well that I think I love seeing those reflections. And also the ones when they talk about, they just didn't realize, like, now we've never met, right? We've only met on digital technology, but I feel like you just had an impact from something I said energetically. So actually that connection is still there. Like, technology doesn't break down energetic connection. And I think in the summer, like in the program we were last on, they were like, some of the young people were so amazed. They're like, I didn't realize that being on Zoom, I would feel so connected with somebody else. And I could feel part of a global team. Like, we had 15 countries on a call. And they're like, I know now there's someone in Nigeria and Malaysia. And, you know, they like the same music as me, or, you know, we shared something. And I think it was that. It's just like the little connection that you can make from bringing people together in a space. And I think those are really important, as well as, I guess, the big impact stories. I quite like the little impact stories too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Because it's often the small things that make the huge differences, isn't it?
Yeah.
And nice to be able to imagine what a safe space feels like online. You know, if you're in your world where it may or may not be, where you feel inspired, where you feel connected because of whatever's going on in your life, but you can actually speak to people from the other side of the world and become friends, become, you know, to understand a little bit about how it is to live in rural India, or how it is to be in you know, Thailand, standing up for your rights and changing things for the young people around you. I think it's huge. How exciting.
Well, we've also got, she joined our team during the pandemic, and I've actually never met her face to face. So she's a member of a team actually on another project. But in one of our first calls, I was chatting with her about her life, and I asked her, I noticed that she'd done a lot of social action. Her name's Dami. She works in Future Foundations. And we just started talking and I was like, wow, she's really inspiring. She's like gold. She's something about her. And I then asked her a question. It's like a coaching question, which is like, if you could write one thing on a billboard for the rest of the world to see, what would it be? And she just said, go, full stop. And I was like, what does that mean? And then we unpicked it, and her journey and her inspiration, she's amazing. So I actually set her the challenge of speaking like she'd never done it before, and she actually then spoke to 300 young people online.
Wow.
And it's things like that. I think it's that thing of like realizing that everybody, I think what I love about GSL is that no matter where you are on your journey and what you're doing, even like everything can be a lesson for somebody else, and you can share your light. Mm-hmm. And for someone, that could be, you know, the bright light they need to do something else. And I think, mm-hmm. yeah, her being able to connect and just share her journey. So she's younger than me and sharing that. And mm-hmm. and she was so nervous, but she did the mm-hmm. most amazing job, and they all felt so inspired by her. And then loads of the comments were like, wow, she's so amazing. And that might not have been a story that would come out if we'd been working in a crazy office environment. And mm-hmm. I probably wouldn't have met her in the same way. So for some ways, working remotely and online and in this world has allowed me to connect with more of my team that I might not have worked with. So mm-hmm. it's kind of a mm-hmm. different, yeah, sorry, diverging. Mm-hmm. But I just thought of her story as also being one that was really quite magical.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll introduce and you to her. She's amazing.
Yeah. And it is that, you know, I fear the online world in many ways, because I really don't, I struggle with the amount of time that I have to spend looking yeah. at a screen, and I really don't want that for my kids. And at the same time, the world that it's opened up in terms of connection yeah. is fantastic, isn't it? And the what COVID's done, I think, has made people feel really familiar with the technology. You know, that nearly all children now have experienced being in a Zoom chat. Maybe they've done it through school or with family who they've not been able to visit for a long time. And so everybody has, I shouldn't say everybody, because there's a lot of people who don't have access to internet and don't have access to computers. But for people who do, it has opened up so many windows, so many doors. Yeah.
Do we still use Windows? Yeah, we do. I was going to say, it's also just, I don't know, like it was last year because we didn't do the festival online, and we met with mm-hmm. Shana McCarthy, who's the CEO of Edinburgh Fringe. She's actually related to one of our staff, and she just said, she was like, just don't hold back in life, just be bold and ask anybody, which is one of the reasons why we reached out to you. So I think, I don't know what it's done, it's kind of dropped this, like I've even done pitches online for like big projects, and there is this professional thing, but it's kind of like not mm-hmm. as like, I don't know, it kind of gets through all that a lot faster. So it's kind mm-hmm. of like, I don't know, we might have had a phone call, we may have never met, because you know mm-hmm. I don't know where you are in England, I'm somewhere else, and to arrange to see each other. But I think mm-hmm. like, for example, I've made connections with other organizations, and one of the things, like people now that feel like friends that I've never met, and part of the reason mm-hmm. is someone's had a toddler during a pandemic, you know, you're instantly like, you go on like a house on fire. And I think it's kind of cut through all those barriers that we often have to showing ourselves, because it's mm-hmm. like, well, you know, if this doesn't work and we don't want to have a conversation again, we can just not have it. But I think it's definitely made me bolder at wanting to reach out to more people. And I find that I'm connecting faster with people in a way that mm-hmm. I guess I didn't. We were also busy before. I mean, I'm really busy now, but like there was less moving around. So you're finding it, my diary's full and I can connect with more people. And I think more people really are wanting to connect. So yeah, we're seeing like with yourself saying yes to the festival, and you know, it's also just making people want to reach out to the people that inspire them more. And I think that's partly because you're like, oh, maybe they'll be doing the same call for 15 minutes. That's different from asking them to travel 4.5 hours to London for a meeting. So I think people are more open to connecting now in some ways.
Great. So tell us more about this festival. And because I do, it happens over 2 days. What age group, by the way, are the young people that you work with?
11 to 17. And then we also have like general admission. So like I said, it kind of just, we used to have a face-to-face, we used to be like the youth voice at Festival Education, that was a face-to-face event at Wellington College in June. So it was a huge like education conference, and we were like, and like, it was great. We used to have like youth panels, but we were kind of limited again by travel. And then mm-hmm. last year we were just, I think like everyone froze in the pandemic. We're like, oh my God, there's a global lockdown. What do we do? And then we had the, because we'd already been running a competition, we just said to the young people, like, still submit. So we got 249 submissions on the 1st of May at the height of global lockdown. And we were like, oh my God. And we were like, what do we do? We used to like, we need to announce a winner. We're like, well, like, why don't we just do it online? But we didn't know how to use Zoom. And my colleague, Nora, gave her the manual. It was like, work out how we do Zoom. And my colleague, Michelle, was like, we need to safeguard it. How do we keep the young people safe? And then we were like, well, we don't even know what we're going to do. We'll just send out registrations and we'll worry about the lineup later. And before you know it, we had 500 young people signed up. And then we just were like, let's start asking people, who do we know? Who's inspiring? Who can tell a story? Who can... And before we knew it, we had this insane lineup with 43 speakers from 8 world regions. And we kind of set ourselves quite a high standard, which I'm now trying to compete with myself, which is a bit ridiculous. But it is that. It's like, how do we create the space for celebration? And that's what it's become. And how do we connect organizations who want to connect with young people or have messages that we think will inspire young people? And that's the kind of platform it's become. This year, there is a real focus on climate change and climate change organizations, a huge focus on nature. So yourself, obviously, with the work you do, and then we're working with the Forest School Association. I think it's probably because I'm a bit of a hippie at heart and love nature, and also because I think during COVID we've also learned the power of outside, and we've learned the importance of connecting with nature and the importance of what it feels like to be connected with nature and not just with other humans. And we also then we try and look to explore different types of diversity. So we've got a really amazing speaker this year talking about neurodiversity, because that was one of the areas we realized we weren't really supporting. We were like, hold on, like young people from it with any background should be able to see themselves as a leader. So I looked for her name's Shana. She's going to be speaking one of the days. She's neurodiverse and she's going to talk about her experiences, and I hope that empowers young people who are neurodiverse to see themselves as leaders. And we've looked to support, you know, hidden disabilities and disabilities and people from anyone can be a leader. And that's the point. You can be a leader in your life. You can be a leader in your community. You can be a leader at home. Mm-hmm. So it's just really an opportunity to showcase the range of being human that's on offer and inspire them. There is a little bit of a push to let's all go outside and hang out in nature and worry about the planet and do things that are great. We reach out to organizations we worked with before, and then I guess we kind of stalk people we're passionate about. So Susie was like, the owner is amazing, can I connect with her? And I was like, yeah, of course, just like send her an email. So my team kind of go through people we were inspired by and we think would be inspiring to the young people, which is how we connected with you. And then those people that I guess hear our call come. So yeah.
Great. And that's exactly what that's how Connection Matters came about. Okay. As well, you know, it was in the middle of the lockdown, right at the very beginning, I had a month where I did nothing and I was a bit like the rabbit in the headlights. But after that I was like, how I can't do the work I would normally do, which is outside with people, so what can I do? And it was about, there are so many people I've worked with and there are so many people that I'd love to work with and love to talk with, and I, being a technophobe myself, took that step into Zoom call recording and then putting out a podcast. And it was a real learning journey for me and so exciting, because I can do the same thing. I can reach out to people who I either have conversations with or I hear of that I just think, wow, that's great. I love that. Let's celebrate it. Let's bring more of this to the world, because, and actually I've had so much feedback, as you will have had, from so many different people about how much it means to them to be able to have a place where they can access positive stories, where they can access human voices that are speaking of hope, transition, a positive future, a way of living that's resourcing them in this time now. And whether or not we were in a pandemic, I think we're all becoming aware that we need to be back out in nature. We are nature, and that this disconnect, the you know, globalization in some terms, or the modern industrial world has forced upon us, taken us out of the fields and into, you know, onto the factories, and has made us that way. So yeah, I'm excited about the festival. I know that, you know, you had a Charles Eisenstein last year, which was very inspiring.
I'm actually interviewing him tomorrow, so I get to do a pre-recorded conversation with him tomorrow that we'll share at the festival, because he's taking some time for himself over the month. So You're helping prep me, by the way, because I'm really nervous about that as well. But like, this is just a really lovely, and you're radiating all this. Your voice, by the way, is a really calming voice, so it's making me feel really calm. So like you said, he's offered to do a conversation with me tomorrow that I can record and share. So I've thought about a couple of questions.
Brilliant.
Based on that so it's really nice that he's offered to come back this year to support again, because he's got some really, and I don't know, his hope for the future is something that I've held on to now for a very long time. Just you know, his understanding of what's possible is so uplifting.
Yeah. Absolutely. And for people who don't know Charles Eisenstein, he wrote an essay at the start of lockdown, which just enabled me to move forwards without the fear of the collapse and the fear of everything terrible happening, because he comes from a perspective which is not, is sort of non-political. It's not, you know, it doesn't follow any agenda. It comes through him and through connection, and it feels like it's something that everybody can I used connection, the word connection, too many times, but it's something that everyone can connect with. I love, you know, the idea that we're at a crossroads, and the future is not written.
Yeah.
And therefore we can manifest that which we believe is possible and more. And really important point to hold on to. So how, if people want to find out more about Global Social Leaders, how do they get in touch, and what currently is available for them to join up and do? And is there a way, lots of questions in one, but is there a way that, you know, parents, teachers, people who have young people that they care about can also engage with this for their young people?
Yeah, well, obviously there's a festival, which is the 17th and 18th of June. If you go onto our website, globalsocialleaders.com, you'll find the festival page. It's open to all to register and it's free. So please do come along. We also, if you want to read about the projects that are written direct by young people, we have a Medium channel, but also they're on our website. We are doing a GSL Summer of Change. So we'll be running 2 World Catalysts this summer. Again, information's on our website. If you're a parent or someone passionate who wants to support and be involved with young people, we have something called our Global Goals Hero. So we ask, one of the ways we support our competition, because we run it completely free and at cost to our organization, is we ask for people who want to support young people to write feedback on their projects. So we launched the competition as part of Global Goals Week, which is like this year it's the 13th of September, is the Monday. So that's when we launch registration. And then the young people get 1 point of feedback. So they submit to us online their project plan and what they're working on. And then we engage with Global Goals Heroes. We've got like 150 people that from so many, you know, I'm going to make you do it this year. And we ask people to feedback 3 to 5 projects, or if they want to do more, they can do more. But it's all done online, so it's all safe. And we make sure the young people are safe. But basically you get to read what they're writing, like what they're doing, and you get to help them think about how they can improve it, or, you know, and encourage them in the areas that they're doing really, really well. We support with that. So you get some guidance from us about what you can write about. And that runs from like the 1st of October to the 31st of January. So last year we had 667 feedbacks that we had to write. Like,
wow.
So we asked for people. So if you do know people who want to know about what we're doing and you want to share, it's so uplifting and inspiring, especially if you are in the UK in those dark winter months when you want to know that the world is going to be a great place again in the future. And you want to know what young people are doing. And we're always looking for inspirational people to connect with. And particularly for teachers and parents, I guess our GSL summer program. But we also have our Instagram channel, which is hashtag Global Social Leaders, but hashtag GSL Goals. And that's where you'll see all the campaigning work that the young people are doing for their own projects, which is really, really amazing. And that's managed by our amazing comms manager, Alice. And she has been like phenomenal in supporting the young people. And yeah, like I said, this year, the digital presence of GSL. I mean, at one point we got these submissions of these young children in Turkey who've all printed their own t-shirts. And we were like, how did they get our logo? Like, so we're like, suddenly we had like 35 kids in Turkey wearing GSL t-shirts. And I'm like, how did they, what they must have, so we've now done a branding pack, so to encourage them to use it wisely. But I think we've just, I don't know, like I said, they've kind of made it into their own thing now, and we're just here to for them to climb up, and that's great. Kind of where we are, and they're kind of running it on their own. We just kind of help nudge it along at points. But yeah, there is the festival on the 17th, 18th of June, summer program, and being a hero from sort of September to January, if you want to connect with us. That's how we get people involved. But I'm always open for a chat if anyone wants to talk.
Cool. Oh, and I will share all of that on the show notes of the podcast. So for anybody who is interested, it's all there, because I know there's a lot of information. So yeah, I think I just want to say thank you. Thank you for all the work that you're doing. Thank you for being as driven as you are to share the voices of young people and create positive stories of change in the world. And thank you for joining me today to help me feel a little bit more excited as I go into my weekend.
Well, you won't get away without me plugging the fact that you'll also be speaking at the festival. So I hope that Leona puts up her own details on her website, but you'll also be doing a talk and a workshop for us, won't you? So
yes,
hopefully.
I will be.
Please make sure you do put that on your website. I'm going to make sure you do it so people can come find you as well. But yeah, no, thank you so much. This is been a really magical experience. So thank you for giving me the opportunity to share what we do. I'm really grateful.
Yeah. Cool. You're so welcome.
Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. I hope it inspires you to follow your path of deep connection. I love sharing this information so much, and I'll always share any relevant links in my show notes. If you like the show, please consider supporting it at patreon.com/connectionmatterspodcast. This is where you'll find bonus episodes, giveaways, and behind the scenes content from me, as well as having my huge heartfelt thanks for any support that you can give me. It really helps with the viability of the show. You can get most of what will be on offer for as little as £3 per month. Please also subscribe on whatever app you use by clicking that little subscribe button below. That way you'll get all of the upcoming episodes straight into your device. And please leave a review on iTunes. It's so helpful to our ratings. The music that opens and closes the show is actually by my very own dad, Ray Johnson. Thanks, Dad. And you can hear more of his music at soundcloud.com/visionray.